It's the Christmas favorite that launched a million pieces of branded merchandise. Because it's a series of disconnected holiday signifiers in want of a meaningful story. Whoops, save it for the pod. Elf was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, my name is Sean Collier. I'm here with two communist screenwriters. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Fascist.
And Camila Adams.
I'm going to miss my deadline.
The way we were. We gave it a 67 and a half, nestled nicely between National Treasure and Talladega Nights. Not the only time I'll say the words Talladega Nights today. That does easily defeat our previous Barbara. On a clear day, you can see forever. 47 and a third. I feel like you know, if anyone, what's the best Barbara Streisand movie?
Oh, great question.
People listen, like A Star is Born?
A Star is Born is really fun. I genuinely love Yentl, but it's not for everyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also like Funny Girl. Like,
oh,
she started real strong.
Sure.
Like, I don't think that's a very good movie, but it's not for me. She is so great in it. You know, she came right out of the box.
Seen it on stage, not on the screen. So that has to be a number. That has to be on the list.
Oh, that must be. Yeah.
Maybe we'll come back around again. And if we do, we will give Franco a call. Thanks to the special guest from last time. But it's the holiday season, everybody.
Yay.
Ding-a-ling-ling-ling-a-ling-ling.
I'm wearing my holiday shirt.
So am I.
That's as festive as I've felt, is seeing that two of the three of us, not me, are dressed for it. Look.
It's coming really fast. It's happening really fast.
It's simultaneously fast and somehow, like, I think Thanksgiving was at a weird time, so it feels like it should be here by now, but it's not.
I
and
don't know.
I just got a lot going on.
You're not feeling the magic of the season.
I'm not, no. But okay.
I am the fucking magic. That's what happens when you're a mom.
Yeah.
I'm the magic of the season.
That's right.
Pass the champs.
I mean, Mary Beth is waking up at 4 a.m. because that's what she does and just putting on a Hallmark movie most days. Mm. So she is all
bless
in.
Her.
Yeah. Maybe we'll feel it more by the end of this review. I won't, but yeah. Maybe the other two, we'll get to it. Elf, what's everyone's history with Elf? Robin?
I watched it with my dad as a Blockbuster night back sometime in college, and Colin likes it, so we own it, and so he puts it on probably once a year, and I sometimes watch it. Mm-hmm. I think it's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Camila?
I have seen this a bajillion and one times. Mm-hmm. I probably saw it in the theater when it came out. Mm. I enjoy it a lot. Dan, it's one of his most favorite movies, and I have to put a cap on it as to where, like, okay, these are only you can watch it between November and January. That's it. Like, I don't want to see Elf in July because he was like kind of abusing it for a minute there. It's like, so yes.
You wanted to let him weigh in.
Yes.
I want that to happen before I say any more awful things.
Let this other grown man.
Right. Right. Robin, can you cut that in?
Okay. So many of you have heard tales of my wonderful, thoughtful, loving, funny, intelligent husband, Dan. Now I'd like to introduce to you Dan with his thoughts on Elf.
So,
Chris, why do you love Elf?
Well, first of all, it's just funny and ridiculous. I am regulated when I can watch it now that I am married, that I can only watch it after Thanksgiving, and then I'm not allowed to watch it
after New Year's.
After New Year's, not New Year's Day.
After New Year's Day, yes.
After New Year's Day, okay. Yes. So I was always unclear, but never pushed the limit.
Well, where was your introduction to Elf? I mean, had you seen it before we got together?
Oh, yeah. I think the scene that just, I was like, oh, this movie's hilarious, was when he starts eating the gum off the rails. You see gum, it's not free candy. I didn't think anything of it. And then later in the movie, when, you know, the first time you see it, him just in New York City in that ridiculous outfit is worth the price of admission. But there's other things. It doesn't have to be that smart. It's a very smart movie, too, because it's literally a Christmas story. It's a movie about a story that becomes a story. So it's
okay,
fairly
yes.
meta
yes.
in that level. And the nemesis is the book publisher,
right?
Which is also just, you know, just great. If you love stories, then you have to love this movie because it is a movie about story on so many different levels. And you don't want to end up on the naughty list, so you might as well just, even if you don't love it, the smart thing to do if you want Christmas presents is just Sean. To be like, I love this. Yeah, it's not a bad Christmas movie because it's a finding family movie. And for some of us, and for Christmas, like yes. literally, it's about finding your family, your literal family for the first time. Like my brother and I were adopted by our father. We always had our mom in our lives. And so this particular Christmas story speaks to me and my brother in a way that no other Christmas story speaks to us, because I imagine it was kind of like always been a fun joke or sick burn. But when the scene comes where he meets his dad for the first time, and it's a Christmas grab, he's like, you're my dad, and I love you. Like, is that how it would for you, Scott? You know, like, the first time you met our dad. And I always think about that moment, you know, in our own Christmas story, our own personal Christmas story, because not everybody... For a lot of people, Christmas is about closeness and family or loving your screwed up family anyway. Like Christmas Story is probably my second favorite Christmas movie, because that's what brought Chinese food into my life as a child. Because like, you can go to the Chinese restaurant on Christmas. We don't have to cook. We're doing it. You know, my mom was about reservations. She could make them. And so that became our like Christmas tradition. Anyway, off topic on Elf, but... Elf is just hilarious, and it takes a tremendous, and you know exactly the size, shape, and viscosity of his balls to wear that outfit. That poor man. Do you know how many guts it took for that act? Oh, my goodness. It'll be like, that's just going to be out there forever. You have to pull it off, and it's either going to be super, super creepy, or it's going to be hilarious, and it turned out to be hilarious.
Yeah, I never thought about... the size of his tights.
Well, I mean, just the risk. You know yeah, what I mean? No, like I get the, it. The it's just a huge risk to take as an actor, I would imagine. I'm sure he had some feelings about it. I'm sure he had to be talked into that
role. I don't think so.
I don't know. I bet he had to be talked into those tights.
I mean, what we found out was that this is like this is only like his second movie after his stint on SNL.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, I'm sure he wore much more ridiculous stuff on SNL.
And then the other thing, too, is just the whole, there's the adoption story and having a hyperactive kid, which is another thing I'm sure my brother and I could relate to. And, like, Bob Newhart was just such a laid-back, you know, adoptive father. Mm. And just to see him on the big screen was a big deal because, you know, most of us only know him from TV. I can't, you know, name me another Bob Newhart movie that you know of.
Not off the top of my head,
yeah,
no.
Right. It's yeah. It's a stretch. So at least he's getting royalties every Christmas, and he deserves it, you know. And the kid in that movie was great too. His half brother.
Uh-huh.
She and even the woman. I forget that actress's name. She did a great job. Just
Mary Steenburgen.
Just the way she embraced her character and brought a certain amount of genuine warmth. You know, she really was kind of like the glue, the love, trying to make all these people have a better Christmas and a better life, bringing the family together. Not the reaction I would expect you to have, or most men probably would not expect their wife to be, oh, cool, a love child just popped up, and he thinks he's an elf, you know? And she's like, we're going to make this work, because, I mean, clearly Walter has such a stick up his butt, and he needed to loosen up. And, you know, she needed him to get out of his shell, and she's really fighting. Most women probably would have divorced him by now. But you know what I mean? But she's like, nope, we're bringing in this elf boy, and that's your brother now. And they bonded, too, and the snowball fight was kind of awesome. I know it was tongue-in-cheek. and the whole singing at the part. But that's the other thing. What's not to love about a Christmas movie is it's got singing. There's Santa. There's a group song in Central Park. Every time I see Mounted Police, I'm always like, ooh, they might be on the naughty list. But I think it was very specific to New York, Central Park, yeah. Mounted. Sorry, Boys in Blue.
Thank you, Dan.
Anyway, I love that movie. It was ridiculous. And he's just got syrup on spaghetti. And he makes it for the whole family.
Great.
It's fantastic.
Look, that's an opinion you should trust more than mine.
Okay.
I don't love Christmas all that much to begin with.
Okay.
I have strong movie opinions. They're often activated when I feel like a movie is embraced and beloved more than it has earned.
Okay, so you don't give like Christmas movies like a pass. Like where I'm concerned, like a lot of Christmas mm-hmm. movies, I'm like, it's a Christmas movie. Like, it's fine. You know, that kind of thing.
It's like you're grading it on a favorable curve.
Yeah.
Got it.
Like, you know, it's cute. You know, unless there's like some glaring fucking oversights or insults. And
it's that. Let's get into it.
I was like, Sean, you got to just lay it out here. Dancing around this.
Here's the central thesis.
This is like, I feel like this is the episode, that Thanksgiving episode of Friends, the one where Chandler doesn't like dogs. It's like, Joey's like, I told you never to tell anybody about this. This is
right. This is like the Shawshank Redemption thing all over again, which, hey, we're saving that one for when it comes up, or hoping it never does.
I don't think that was a number one movie in America.
Maybe it wasn't.
I don't think it was. That was a sleeper hit.
Hey, you have the opportunity to decide what happens on our 200th episode. It could be anything. My issue is, personally, I think this is a mediocre movie. It's less for me than for most people, but I think even if you're more friendly to the material, I think at the end of the day, it's a deeply mediocre movie.
Mm.
And it has become one of the Christmas movies. I could probably name 25 better Christmas movies off the top of my head.
Go! Right.
And could probably get to 50 if I really sat down with it.
Before Elf.
Right. And so the fact that it is so inescapable, and there are a guy I know says, I'm busy all month with Buddy the Elf appearances, because he looks enough like Buddy the Elf
wow.
that he buys a costume and people pay him. And there's merchandise ever. You could walk into a Kogo's and get some Elf stuff right now.
True.
That there is just too much embrace of a movie that is fine at best
mm-hmm.
and doesn't do what Christmas movies should do. I do know the grading on the curve you're talking about.
Mm.
It happens whenever a Christmas movie does the thing. And the thing is the characters earn the joy of Christmas through trials and tribulations.
Okay.
Every good Christmas movie and most mediocre Christmas movies are about that. Christmas Vacation is about riding through all of this bullshit to still have the joy at the end. So is Die Hard. So so is A Christmas Story, which we've covered on this and I don't love, but it's still about that.
Right.
It's about getting to Christmas and earning it. In Elf, it's just Christmas is the best and everything is fine and shut up and like Christmas and everything will be fine. There's no conflict. There's no obstacle. No one has an arc.
I would say that James Caan has an arc.
I think it's kind of forced.
An arc implies gradual movement.
Okay.
He's a jerk, snap, he likes Christmas
sure.
and his son.
Okay.
There's no development of anyone in this movie. For me, it just doesn't do the Christmas movie thing, and it's kind of okay, and everyone treats it like it's A Wonderful Life. Like it doesn't earn the way people feel about it.
I don't like Christmas.
Right.
At all.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners, my dad died on Christmas, so for the last 20 years I've been like, boo.
Yeah.
Was it the 25th?
Yes.
Oh,
wow.
So
you've always said that, and I assumed it was in the season, but
no.
On the day.
Literally Christmas Day. God. And so I'm like Phoebe Cates.
Yeah.
No Christmas for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not looking for in this movie the magic of Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
The magic of Christmas I'm completely cold to.
Mm-hmm.
But what I am not completely cold to is people loving something so much that they explode with joy. And that's all that Buddy does. Period. Like when I taught comedy, I would tell people all the time, enthusiasm is funny.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really good example of why.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I don't need the magic of Christmas. So I think I tolerate Elf more.
We talk about Christmas movies as a genre. I know that in the technical definition of the word genre, it's not. Right. It's a subject.
Right.
And I had this conversation with my uncle about baseball movies. Baseball movies are inherently supposed to have fun in them. So that's why I can never say Eight Men Out is the best baseball movie. Because while it is probably the best film involving baseball, it is there's fun in Bull Durham and Major League. And you know, I do think a Christmas movie, particularly one that is as Christmas focused as Elf, which might be the most Christmassy movie, should have played the formula a little bit more than this does.
It just really just leaning in heavy on Will Ferrell and his childlike wonderment as an adult, which at the time, what, 2003 this came out, which is, this is at Will Ferrell's height.
This is his beginning.
Oh, really?
It's in Factsy. This is his first or I think this is his second film role after SNL. Only Old School. Like he left SNL in 2002, Old School, then Elf.
Okay.
And you could make the argument that it's his first
starring role
other than like Night at the Roxbury.
Right. Which doesn't really count.
No. So this really kicks out this Anchorman's a year later, you know. Even like Bewitched.
So this is Camille is right. This is the age of Will Ferrell, but it is the beginning of the age of Will Ferrell.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I've said enough. Hey, have you escaped Elf for the past 22 years? Tell me how. But first...
Oh, shit, is it my recap?
I thought it was.
I did not prepare a recap.
Wait, I did... Wait, we were.
I did the one before that, I think.
It's totally my recap, and I didn't prepare a recap. Okay.
Ghostbusters. You did Ghostbusters.
All right. Right. Woo.
Hey.
All right.
Help.
I mean, I feel like you already said it.
We need a Christmas miracle.
Okay. Right. Here's the deal.
Go.
So Will Ferrell is kidnapped by Santa accidentally.
Correct.
And but he was an orphan, so I guess it doesn't matter. So they raise him in the North Pole, and he ends up Will Ferrell sized, and it's very funny. His dad is Bob Newhart, which is so cute. And he's like, listen, your real dad is in New York, and he's on the naughty list. And he's like, I won't be satisfied till I meet my real dad. So he goes to New York and tries to find him. He gets mixed up in the Santa display at Gimbel's. He falls in love with a awkwardly blonde Zoe Deschanel. Mary Steenburgen, Academy Award winner Mary Steenburgen, is his stepmom, and she loves him immediately, which is also really cute. They work at a book company. Peter Dinklage walks on the table. They make a book, and it saves the day. They sing a song, too.
Okay.
That's most of it.
Yeah, that's it. That's a minute.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
It ends in a Santa Ex Machina where Santa sleigh crashes conveniently, and then it's like, well, if we all sing, then Santa can fly, which resolves none of the issues of the film. It just gets the sleigh moving again.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously sleighs are song powered. That makes sense.
Well, there should have been a more. I mean, okay. So going back to Sean's point, like, I agree that to make that ending, to make Sean not hate it, we would have had to have seen throughout that the Christmas spirit is dying all around in the real world. And we did not see that.
If they had like a Christmas spirit thermometer.
Yeah. If like not just James Caan is on the naughty list.
Right.
But there's like, you know, all these other people who no longer believe in the magic.
It insists upon Christmas. It does not insist upon itself. Well, kind of. But it insists Christmas is not earned. It is the religion. Right?
Okay.
It does not question that Christmas is perfect and powerful.
Okay, yeah.
Let me tell you some facts. I can just bitch about it all day long, and no one wants that. Well, no, you all put on Elf and the podcast about Elf, and you're like, oh, won't we relive
some of the
favorite
magical
and you got
moments.
Some grumpy bitches here.
Yeah. So it's released November 7th, 2003. Did not go to number one its first weekend. It debuted in second behind The Matrix Revolutions. 48.4 to 32.1 million.
I went to the theater that weekend to see The Matrix Revolutions, and I was ill.
Is that the third one?
It's the third one.
Yeah.
And I was on a lot of cold medicine. And boy, is that not a good movie to watch when you were so zooted on cold medicine. Because it's so confusing and weird and, like, disturbing looking.
Yep.
Like, when there's, like, those millions of Agent Smiths. Like, imagine that slightly high. No.
I get it. I think I watched, I went to the theater and watched Fear and Loathing on acid.
Oh, don't do that. Or do? Took the number one spot the following weekend. It flipped with Matrix Revolutions because word of mouth came out. Also outgrossed the debuting Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World, which was in second.
Your dad's favorite movie.
27.2 million was enough to win weekend two for Elf. And get onto our list. That was its only weekend win as the 38th number one movie of that year, a 1 week winner. Lost the following weekend to The Cat in the Hat with Mike Myers. Speaking of acid trips, it obviously stuck around very well. It was in the top 10 all the way through Christmas, made a ton of money over Thanksgiving weekend, $173.3 million, 7th for 2003. Pop quiz, hotshot, because I don't have too much to report. What are the 10 highest grossing Christmas movies?
Ooh.
Here are a couple of caveats. This list is worldwide gross. And Christmas movie is broadly defined here. Like, this has Die Hard in the 21st position.
Okay.
This has stuff like Gremlins and even Ghosts of Girlfriends Past, which is only barely a adaptation of Christmas Carol. So what are the 10 broadly defined highest grossing global Christmas movies?
Home Alone.
Home Alone is number two.
Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
Home Alone 2, Lost in New York is number three.
Miracle on 34th Street.
No.
How about...
This is unadjusted, so newer is going to have a big advantage. Miracle on 34th Street is nowhere on the top 50.
National Lampoon's Christmas.
No, that didn't make a lot of money. That's a home hit. 39th on this list.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a home video.
The Santa Claus.
12th.
Christmas with the Cranks?
Not particularly high up, no.
How about the 31st? Animated Grinch?
Oh, yeah.
Animated Grinch is number one. The highest grossing Christmas movie of all time is the Benedict Cumber Grinch with $538 million globally. Home Alone was $476, so the Grinch won.
Jim Carrey Grinch also.
Jim Carrey Grinch is number four.
Okay.
So you've got the top
Polar Express.
Four. Polar Express is six.
Do we count The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe?
We do not.
Okay.
Nutcracker and the Four Realms is 16th, but no.
I saw that in the theaters because I thought it might get an Oscar nomination. It didn't.
It had Oscar buzz at the time.
Yeah.
That did not pay off.
It was one of those things where it's like, this could easily get a most production design or most costumes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'll walk down the rest. One was the Animated Grinch. Two was Home Alone. Three was Home Alone 2. Four was the Jim Carrey Grinch. Five is... six is Polar Express. Combine Polar Express and the Jim Carrey Grinch and you get...
Scrooge.
Yes.
Whatever that was called. Jim Carrey's a Christmas... Yeah. Jim Carrey in a Christmas Carol.
Jim Carrey Christmas Carol is fifth. Seventh we have covered on this show during the holiday season.
Batman Returns.
Correct. Eighth, I keep giving it five stars and hand-waving how problematic it is in retrospect.
Really?
From the very same Christmas season as the film we're here to talk about. In fact, this...
A problematic Christmas movie from 2003 that I can't think of?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
More of a romance than a strictly defined Christmas movie.
It can't be four Christmases because you...
No,
you
hate that one.
The hell out of that one.
Yeah. Christmas is the subject but not the topic of this film. Number eight, Love Actually.
Oh.
Right.
Is The Holiday on there too?
Holiday is 11.
Ah.
Nine, we have also covered on this show during the Christmas season.
A Christmas Story?
No. This is a while ago.
While you were sleeping.
Ah.
This is not in the same genre as either of those.
Okay.
It's the highest.
Die Hard?
What's that?
We talked about Die Hard.
No, we talked about...
Die Hard 2, Die Harder!
Yeah. Die Hard 2 is ninth, and in 10th place, why are we here?
Elf
is number 10.
Buddy,
there you go.
Elf.
Top 10 followed by the likes of The Holiday, The Santa Claus. Red 1 manages 13th, While You Were Sleeping is 14th. Daddy's Home 2 Nutcracker in the Four Realms, Santa Claus 2, Four Christmases is 18th, then Gremlins. Arthur Christmas, don't even know what that is.
Is Go on that list?
No.
Ugh! How can I trust it?
Well, I don't know if that's, is it a Christmas movie? And
I think that's what Go didn't make enough money.
That's probably.
Camila's like, I was there every other Wednesday for the full theatrical run.
Right, exactly.
Go made less than $17 million.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
That's a great movie.
So, yes, this is the 10th highest grossing Christmas movie of all time with a script by David Barenboim, who never did anything else that worked. His other.
I thought you were going to say never did anything else, and I was going to be like, respect.
Right. No,
he's like, I did it. I'm going to get merchandising pennies for the rest of my life.
He kept trying, and they followed this with the Eddie Murphy Haunted Mansion.
Oh, no.
Then did Zoom, then did the Spiderwick Chronicles, and then an animated film called Strange Magic that I think was not for one of the big studios. He originally wrote this in 1993.
Wow.
The early targets were Chris Farley and Jim Carrey for Buddy the Elf. And apparently that version was PG-13 and too dark. Jon Favreau thought it was too dark of a treatment.
Interesting.
They went through several rewrites. The last and definitive one was Will Ferrell and Adam McKay rewriting it. That helped convince Jon Favreau. Jon Favreau also got the idea of paying homage to Rankin and Bass, and that's what he wanted to do.
I'm interested to see that darker script.
Yeah. Might have added some...
Some depth.
This is Favreau's sophomore effort, by the way, only made from 2001 before this. This is still 5 years before Iron Man.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't direct it.
Oh.
Sophomore directorial effort.
Gotcha.
But yeah, this is long before he was a proven commodity, so a bit of a risk in taking him. And I don't think I got no problem with his work.
It's good.
He's doing fine, and he was obviously the most concerned with the North Pole segment.
The North Pole stuff is so fun.
Oh, yeah.
I genuinely love Giant Man Tiny Chair. Can't help it.
One of my issues is like I think Bob Newhart's the funniest thing in this movie.
Bob Newhart.
And so to like sideline him for 60% of it, like, come on. Hey, the soundtrack went gold somehow.
Huh.
It has a lot of jazzy Christmas tunes, songs that are in the middle, like Pennies from Heaven is on it.
Yeah.
The
Lazy Man's Christmas music list. Like, come on.
The Zooey Deschanel Baby It's Cold Outside, which is with Leon Redbone over the credits. That was released as a single. But yeah, a lot of people wanted the soundtrack.
How do we feel about we'll get to it.
Yeah. just a few more. No expensive baubles. Not even an MTV Movie Award.
Wow.
Will Ferrell lost Best Comedic Performance to Jack Black in School of Rock.
Correct. Yeah.
But plenty of Best Christmas Movie appearances. The following are all on my list. Total Film ranked it third all time. Entertainment Weekly fourth. The Guardian fourth. Hollywood Reporter sixth. Forbes seventh. Empire 11th. The Chicago Tribune 17th. Jeez. Come on.
It's just those are people that really didn't do the work. Like, as much as I do enjoy this movie, I agree with you. It's not, it wouldn't be my top 10.
Yeah. There's a musical. Of course.
Man.
So unnecessary.
It pops up on both Broadway and the West End from time to time. Broadway runs in 2010, 2012, and 2024. It is never ongoing. It is always, we are opening on November 2nd and closing on January 16th
or something.
I should hope
so. Follow my rules.
It gets good and if not glowing reviews.
Well, what I don't want to do is listen to a song about Buddy loving syrup.
I'm sure it's in there. Surely you must be wondering, why is there no sequel?
Nope.
Allegedly, it's because Jon Favreau and Will Ferrell don't really get along.
Oh.
Yeah. Jon Favreau was interested at a few points, you know, talked about it for a while. It never went anywhere because Will Ferrell doesn't like to do sequels in general. Now they've fallen out enough that neither one of them ever says. Jon Favreau used to say, we might. Now neither one of them ever says anything about it. So this is where it will end, and I thank them for that. Change my mind.
I don't think I can change your mind, no. Sean. You seem very firmly full of hatred.
Like this has gone on for quite some time. And
you know I'm not going to be out here making an effort to make people like a Christmas thing more.
Right.
Well, don't we? I mean, it's... Well, if you think about it, more of just like the fish out of water.
I like some of those scenes. The Peter Dinklage scene is the best thing in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, his whole performance, the way he's pitching the story, and then it's the perfect execution, and it's, here's a deeply unpopular opinion, that, like, in comedy, there can be no absolutes when it comes to doing blank is offensive. because on paper, this should be. Oh. And yet, it is perfect. Mm. This is an example of, here is the exact right circumstances on which you could get away with this string of jokes. And
so much of it is because of Peter Dinklage's performance. Like, right. He is able to thread the needle of highlighting why it should be offensive.
But yes, but also... Right.
But being hilarious.
Right.
Yeah.
But there's also the fact that Buddy genuinely is asking, are you...
Yeah.
Because that's all he knows. That's what, right. To him, that's right.
Right.
That is what it is. So, I mean, to me, my favorite dynamic is between Buddy and Faison.
Oh, that's great.
When they first, he's like yelling in his face how excited he is. And the still blank way that Faison turns around and stares at him and keeps going with his announcements.
He is so good in this movie. He is perfectly cast. Mm-hmm.
And he was a last minute replacement for somebody.
Really? Cedric the Entertainer?
To the point where he's wearing somebody else's, like his character name is, hold please.
This will also give me the opportunity. I wanted to read something for Roger Ebert's review.
Mm. Yeah, maybe he can turn me around. It is, Wanda Sykes was originally cast
that role.
Dropped out at the last minute. Faison Love came in very, very late. There was already a name tag. I don't know what the name is, but it was a generally female name. So whatever his character is.
She would have been great, too.
Oh, plays Wanda. His name tag says Wanda. Yeah.
That's amazing. Roger Ebert is just listing the cast and putting yes with an exclamation point after everyone. And then he gets to Faison Love as Santa's elf manager. Does it get any better than this? Yes. Peter Dinklage. Anyway, his general review was, this is a nice movie that made me feel nice.
Aw. Well, what about looking at it? Sure. Like we're finding family.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the lens that we look at it through. Or nature versus nurture. Because that was one of the things, too. It kind of bugged me. Like, yes, Buddy is raised as an elf.
Mm.
But why does he have, like, super elf, like, snowball making powers?
Good question.
I guess it's taught. I guess that's not something.
So the human body can operate that fast if under the right tutelage.
Yes.
But the ending of the finding family would be realizing how much his adopted family loved him.
Right.
And no longer seeking the approval of his New York family. Which I know he goes back to the North Pole, but like he doesn't learn that lesson.
No.
He doesn't react. That character doesn't react or change at any point.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, I don't know, because I don't know, let's say he wasn't actually going to find family.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to meet his dad, and at no point does he ever, like, turn sour on Newhart, on Papa Elf, or the rest of them. He really loves and appreciates that family that has raised him, but yet he's still got questions about James Caan. And so, then he does, you know, okay, fine, I go, like, he doesn't like sugar canes and fucking whatever, but we'll find a common ground at some point, I guess. But he does go back and still embraces his elf culture after he marries Jovi. Which,
so yes, we were going to talk about Zooey Deschanel.
Yeah, how do we feel about Zooey?
I go really back and forth on her.
Yeah,
she's so much the way she is,
yes.
Which normally is a good thing, and I like don't want to stifle her.
I want to like her.
Yes. But sometimes I'm like, relax, you don't need to have your eyes that open all the time.
Thank you. It's the eyes, like your eyes, you can't be, she's actually that big, you're doing
constant
extra
state of surprise. She also just does not look good blonde. I don't know why they made her blonde. Mm. They should have put that wig on and said, never mind. Never mind.
That's on us. That's our bad.
So I don't know how that made it all the way through the movie.
Yeah.
A seasonal retail employee showers at work?
She said they cut off her water?
There's a shower at the Gimbals?
I used to work at an office with a shower.
It happens, but it's usually when something is converted into offices, not
a department store,
a busy New York department store. It just felt like we needed to get a sexy shower scene in this PG Christmas movie.
Yeah, that's weird.
Especially the way that she's actually like performing in the shower. Like,
yes.
The doe eyes and the come hither me looks.
She also gets at the other thing. I've said this before about Step Brothers. I think Step Brothers is funnier than this, but this is also why.
Wait, Steve Burton is also. Yeah. We just had the same realization at the same moment.
And she does the same thing in both of them. I prefer my Will Ferrell movies with internal agreement on the reality of the world. In Talladega Nights, everyone is in agreement about what is and is not unusual in this situation.
Okay.
And even in Anchorman, to a lesser extent. Anchorman's way over the top, but everybody's way over the top. In Elf and in Step Brothers, there are people that are going, he's acting like a fucking elf. Why is this makes no sense, everybody. And then people like Zoe and Mary Steenburgen are just like, he's just fine. It's like, no, you have to have internal reality. This guy is either weird or he's not. It's not dependent on what the script needs to decide whether or not this guy is unusual.
I think that there are just people like that, though, who will just be like, okay.
I mean, to an extent, but like Mary and Zoe, they should not have been. Like, he's in your house.
Yeah.
With your child's son.
For James Caan, this is a horror movie. Has someone done, like, the horror movie trailer for Elf? Because you could.
And Zoe, and anytime I watch it, I try to, like, come at it from her perspective. Like, what if some dude like this, like, tried to take me out? No. There's no. There's no way. And there's nothing.
But you're also a sensible lady who doesn't shower at work.
But right. There's also, like, that's, and they don't do anything to tell us. From what they show us on film about Zoe, she should have all sense. She should be a sensible person.
You're right.
There's nothing that points to her being kooky or, you know, also the normal thing that Zoe does.
Right. I believe Mary Steenburgen 100%. And that might just be that she's a good actor.
Or she's just already checked out of life in general. She's on so many fucking antidepressants.
And she's just like, I'm here to give you love. I believe that. I do see you say I'm more in line with your thinking that yes, maybe it doesn't make as much sense for Zooey Deschanel's character to be on board with all of this. She should feel slightly threatened.
Well, that said, I genuinely like any scenes where he is put in a situation where he has to react according to his world. Like the whole Gimbals thing, especially the you sit on a throne of lies trying to work. That's great.
And no way to watch that scene and not laugh.
Right.
Like, I just can't.
I would think that, though, before he left the North Pole, Santa would have told him, hey, don't be fooled, but there's going to be some dudes that look like me.
Right, because they clearly have a pretty good situational awareness of the world. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're, like, cloistered up there.
Right.
And the scene in the mail room, the you know. The
I'm 26 years old.
I like all of these a lot. And then when it tries to get back to plot, maybe the hardest I laughed was him testing the jack-in-the-boxes. Like bit by bit, there's lots of good stuff here. It just falls apart for me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Bah humbug. The trailer for Elf.
Oh, yeah.
Hi.
Your costume is pretty.
Oh, it's not a costume. I'm an elf.
Oh.
Well, technically I'm a human, but I was raised by elves.
New Line Cinema presents the story of one elf who's coming home for Christmas.
Boy. Can't wait to see my dad. We're going to go ice skating and eat sugar plums.
Now.
Dad!
We should call security.
Good idea.
I like to whisper too.
Buddy's experiencing a world he never knew existed.
But he's your son.
What am I going to do?
He's certifiably insane.
What he needs is to be nurtured. Cannot stay here.
You can't just throw him out in the snow.
He loves the snow. He's told me 15 times.
Ow! Son of a nutcracker!
This holiday season.
I think you're beautiful and my tongue swells up when I am around you.
Get ready.
I planned out our whole day. I thought maybe we could make gingerbread houses and maybe even hold hands.
For a tall tale.
How are we going to get the star on top?
Of elfish proportions.
I got it.
Will Ferrell.
Okay, people, Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh, my God!
Elf.
I didn't know you had elves here.
You're hilarious, my friend.
Did you have to borrow a reindeer to get down here?
Hey,
you're feeling strong, my friend. Call me Elf one more time.
He's an angry elf.
Look at you! Ow!
Buddy the Elf, what's your favorite color?
Again, you gotta like some Will Ferrell. Yeah. This is selling the movie on one thing.
I mean, that's really what it is, though.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I feel like this trailer is selling the movie for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this Letterboxd list. It's called Trapped Under Ice, a snowbound list of films, because it's like half every Christmas movie and half movies where horrible things happen
like
in the snow.
Thing.
The Thing yeah. and Fargo and Dead the Snow Shining. And The Revenant and The Shining. And it's
McCabe like, and Mrs. Miller.
Not included, but would be accurate. Yeah, they would have, it would be here if it was. I kind of love cold movies where bad things happen. Mm. I don't know why. That's just,
I made a list of these a long time ago when I had a blog. And I want to find that list. Okay, so what is your number one go-to Christmas movie?
Oh, good. I was going to ask this, too.
Christmas Vacation. One, because I grew up with it. That's always the answer. But two, because it's honest about, you know, the harder you try to make it perfect, the more south that everything will go.
Right.
And it's your job to find the love and enjoyment amid the chaos. Mm. That's what, and it's really funny. And it's funnier than any other Christmas movie.
I'll give that to you.
Robin.
I mean, I'm basic diehard. I also watch Kiss Kiss Bang Bang every year.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's another one.
And I love Go.
Muppet Christmas Carol's way up there.
I'm like, we've talked about this in the show before. I'm like not as enthusiastic about Muppet Christmas Carol as most millennials, especially weird because I do love the Muppets. Mm. I like the Mickey Christmas Carol short. It's like 20 minutes long. I watched that last night.
That's scary. Yeah.
It is so scary. Colin was like, you watched this as a child? And I'm like, I sure did.
Yeah, to this day, like, I haven't seen it in a long time, but to this day, like, that, why it's you, Ebenezer?
Yeah.
Like,
That was a really good impression of the ghost of Christmas future Pete.
Camila?
I'm always quick to say Charlie Brown Christmas, but that's like 20 minutes long. It's not really a movie. So then it would go Charlie Brown, National Lampoon's, and then Go.
Mm-hmm.
National Lampoon's like cracks me up every time, especially when Eddie.
It is really funny. Like,
mm-hmm.
I haven't watched it since I was a kid, though.
Oh, every year in the theaters. Like, I think last year was the first time I saw it in the theaters. But
I actually used to host a quote along for National Lampoon's at the Hollywood Theater. Mm-hmm. R.I.P.
I'm not all in on Christmas horror. I will do a couple every year. But I don't watch 30 of them like some horror hounds will.
I like Krampus.
Krampus is good.
And Black Christmas?
The original.
The remake.
The remakes are good. The original is good. Have you seen the one that's like 74 with Margot Kidder?
No.
Oh, it's fantastic. Okay. People say that's the first slasher, that Halloween is lying. Black Christmas is
interesting.
The first. Because it's sorority and they're going one by one. And, you know, it establishes a lot. Very, very early. And it's great. It's such great atmosphere. The one to look for is English title, Deadly Games. French title, 3615 Code Père Noël. which is basically Home Alone as a horror movie. Lots of fun. Contains original Bonnie Tyler songs. So
cool.
Gotta watch that one.
Outstanding.
What is it called again?
Deadly Games.
Deadly Games.
Yeah.
Did you guys see Violent Night?
Yeah, it's good.
It was on in my presence. I didn't pay attention.
I liked it. I don't have to watch it every year.
No,
I liked it.
But that just kind of brings my segue about Dave Harbour.
Yeah.
Is that his name? Mm-hmm. Have you heard about him and Lily?
I have listened to Lily Allen's divorce album.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? Like, okay,
buddy.
Which is not an album per se. It's just more like she just reading pages from her diary. Because I didn't know anything about any of this until what got my attention. Hey, Lily Allen has a new album. Great, because I liked her other stuff, and then I listened, and it's just like, oh, okay.
I love divorce albums as a genre, and so when I heard that there was one, I don't particularly care about Lily Allen, but I was like, yes, immediate press play,
yes,
and it was pretty good.
Yeah, who the fuck is Marilyn, or whatever that was.
And yeah, he also sounds like garbage.
Yeah, which really upset me.
Yeah, it's not speaking of people I want to like, you know. I mean, I love him in Stranger Things. Right. I love him in Marvel doing the exact same character with a Russian accent.
And right.
I've generally liked him since, if you remember, like, Stranger Things hit 4 months after it came out. right?
Right.
They dropped.
Oh, I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, they dropped it. I forget what year that was. It was 2015.
God, it was
maybe.
A long time ago.
So long ago. These kids have gone through like old 11 had a baby.
I feel like they dropped it in April, like April or May. And in June or July, some people said, you got to start watching this thing. Mm-hmm. And by September, everyone was. Right. But there was that in between where you knew a person who was like, you have to go watch this thing called Stranger Things.
Mm. I still remember that I was in the green room and my friend Jocelyn was like, have you heard of this thing called Stranger Things? Mm-hmm. And everyone like came towards her to be like, Stranger Things, Stranger Things, Stranger Things. And I was like, I guess I got to watch this show.
And you know, Marta Mazzoni, mm-hmm. Marta on the Move podcast, mm-hmm. when we were, you can't.
My current improv coachee.
Oh nice. Yeah. When we were, You Can't Handle the Truth and on Epicast, Marta on the Move was also on Epicast. Mm-hmm. In that summer before it was everywhere, David Harbour was on her podcast just because she called his agent. Huh. And it hadn't happened yet, so his agent was like, I mean, sure, he'll call you.
Wow.
So there's like an hour with my, and he seemed great, and he seemed so nice, so I've always been rooting for him.
Sometimes people are one way in their regular lives and another way in their relationships.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, sometimes people can be fine to be a friend or a colleague, and you don't want anything to do with them romantically.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like he was already... I don't know. We don't need to discuss. This is not the David Harbour podcast, but I've got my theories. I've got some thoughts.
What else on Elf? Everything involving the naughty list works. Naughty list bit is solid.
Yeah.
Okay. Should we save Sean for last for scoring it?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. I, despite my distaste for Christmas, enjoy watching this movie. I think it's funny and cute, and so I'm going to give it 70 points.
Right on.
Yeah.
This always brings a smile to my face. It is one of a heavy quoted movie in my household with, make work your favorite being number one and give it a 91.
Every time I watch it, it goes down because every time I refine my distaste a little bit more. That said, I can't go to the bottom of the list. It's very funny. There are bits I like. As you said,
you just hate and resent it.
I just hate and resent it. So 42.
Ooh. Yikes. Big spread.
Yeah.
Big spread.
Wow.
67 and 2/3.
Oh,
didn't we just have that score?
Is less than 2/10 of a point above the way we were.
Above? Okay.
Yeah, no, it's better. It's ever so slightly
and
higher.
Another big spread because you'll recall Franco's 95 counted.
Well, what's funny is this is the first time we've had like our combined score of a movie, and I felt like that doesn't feel right.
It should be higher.
Yeah, it should be a little bit higher.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not here to debate about it, but yeah, that's the first time that's ever happened.
I think you are in the least primed to like Elf room in Pittsburgh.
So
narrator.
I'm sorry, and yet I stand by it.
Just
settle down. Settle down with the Elf.
It's fine.
To the bingo card, certainly narrator. Do we have out of ammo for the snowballs?
Sure.
Yeah.
Did he run out of ammo?
The little boy did, I thought. Didn't he?
I think he says, I'm out of ammo.
Yeah.
He said, I'm out.
That's a bingo then.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
All right.
Yay.
Snuck it in the calendar year. What the hell happens now?
Yeah, because you can't decide what happens on our 200th episode.
Yeah. Right.
I think you pick a movie.
Yeah, just pick a movie.
I just did that with the natural.
But not on our list. Was natural on our list?
Oh, that's right. You get to pick a movie not on our list.
Oh, yeah. So I got some shit to say about A Shawshank Redemption. No. I will consider carefully, and I will make it more agreeable than Carnival of Souls. You Can't Handle the Truth. By the way, as we're recording this, it's 6 days after the last episode.
This is 6 days after our last episode, so this will be a shorter You Can't Handle the Truth segment.
And I've been working on a show and doing all sorts of things. So I watched two movies between The Way We Were and Elf. They were first The Plague, which I think is coming out soon. Like this has been submitted for our consideration in various places.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think it's actually hitting theaters until January. And I really liked Joel Edgerton is not the lead. He's just the only recognizable person. He's the coach of a boys like water polo camp.
Gotcha.
It seems like it's the late 90s. There are no cell phones around, but it's just about bullying and body horror and social pressures of early teenage years, and it's so real. If you're like me and you were a kid who had, particularly a boy who had a really awkward 12 to 14, this is going to hit really hard, but still somehow like compelling and watchable, and you want to be there. It's
you're not making me want
to
watch it.
I don't know how to sell it. It pulls a really nice string of influences filmmaking wise to make for a compelling experience. The one, have you seen Beau Travail?
You know what? I haven't. I've put it on before.
Yeah.
And lost interest.
That's the secret sauce that makes it. They've said, like, this is heavily influenced by Beau Travail. And I'm like, it is. And then by the end, it is. And that somehow makes
it
more of a film. It's really good. If you happen to see it and think, should I watch that? You should. The only other thing I saw was 5 hours long. Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair.
How was that experience?
I've been right the whole time. It always should have been one movie. Mm-hmm.
Is there stuff in there that was not in?
I'm really glad that there are two movies so that I can only ever watch the first one.
Well, I forget which review I read. It might have been Matt Zollersites has a really good review of it. I read a couple, but somebody pointed out the reason why that happens is because as it's conceived, it hits you so hard with action in the first half
that
you're like, I need some air, and then gives you more talking in the back half as we get towards the conclusion, which works much better if you're sitting from beginning to end. It has a really nice arc and a lot of parallels if you watch the whole thing that you don't get.
Oh, I see. So you're saying I would like part two better if it were the second half.
Yes.
That makes sense to me.
Yes. It feels better as the second half of an experience than as a standalone experience.
Yeah, I did, to be fair, I watched the movies the same day the first time.
Sure, sure. But this cleans it up a little bit in that there's not an awkward ending on part one and a remember last time on the beginning of part two. There's just an intermission at about that point. Mm. But, you know, it's really easy to high road here if anyone's like, I don't know, 4.5 hours is really long. You can really easily go, oh, so you like Harvey Weinstein's version. You like the Weinstein cut? You think that Weinstein was really correct in how he handled this material? The new stuff is limited. There's some added like gore and stuff that got cut from the R-rated version. Mm. The anime is longer. We get
cool.
There's even more of that Oren backstory.
That's the thing I found most disturbing.
That's so upsetting.
Yeah, that keeps going for a while. Put a pin in new stuff because there's a weird part. But I'll say, I think that if after, just as his fourth movie, you know, after, if then he was like, no, I'm giving you a 4.5 hour movie and it's going to be a odd martial arts epic, I think it would have been hailed as, you know, not as many people would have seen it, but I think people would have been like, what an audacious thing. And I think Uma Thurman would have gotten nominated. Mm. Instead, it's not his most successful thing because it was awkwardly cut.
Right.
It works really, really well. The only splotch on it, the longer anime is one of the new things. The other new thing is after the credits, which are kind of the length of the credits of both movies. The credits are like 12 minutes long.
Oh, boy.
Then there's some like little Tarantino tags like he likes to put after the credits. Mm. And then after a few more seconds, it's like, here's something else. And what the something else is an extra chapter of Kill Bill that was in the first draft of the script.
Oh, I saw people logging this.
Yeah, and never appeared again. And that's very interesting to see. It's immediately after she kills Vivica A. Fox. She is attacked by Go-Go's twin sister, who has tracked her down. It's in L.A. They're like running in and out of these L.A. houses. And this is where the pussy wagon is destroyed. That's why the car is not there in any of the subsequent chapters.
Gotcha.
It's very interesting to see that scripted stuff. Uma Thurman does the voice and the motion capture for it. So Uma Thurman came back to do more Bride content. Mm. That's all of the good stuff about it. The bad stuff is this is literally made by Fortnite. This is literally
What? So that's why people are logging it with one star.
So what happened was Epic Games, who makes Fortnite, collaborates with everybody. You can be Batman or Iron Man or a Ninja Turtle or a Simpson. Like, everything is in Fortnite.
Right. Huh.
And at some point they approached Tarantino, like, we want the Kill Bill characters in Fortnite. And they were like, we also, you may not know, we do like extended animations. We have an animation studio. Do you have like 8 minutes of content that we can just put together? Wow. And he was like, yeah, you can have this if you want. So they did. It's just weird because there's like Fortnite characters in the middle of this 10-minute animation.
That's crazy.
It's unfortunate how it happened.
Also, I desperately don't want to watch that after 4 hours in the movie theater.
I think that's why it's not edited into the film, because it's so jarring. Mm. It's a bonus feature.
Okay.
If you bought a DVD and it was like, watch the Fortnite crossover, you would be like, that was goofy, but I got a little more story and Uma Thurman came back. Fun. Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, I loved it. I think it's leaving theaters. I'm sure there'll be a fancy home release.
Right now I'm on the fuck Quentin Tarantino bandwagon.
Because he was mean to Matthew Lillard. Mm-hmm. And Paul Dano. I want to
friend Paul Dano
Devin
too.
Marshall reviewed The Whole Bloody Affair. 5 stars, would be 5.5 if Paul Dano were in it.
Listen, as we've seen with Scorsese and Coppola and all the big guy directors hit a certain age and then they go, here's a list of people and things I don't like.
Right. Nobody cares. Yeah. That is a you thing, sir. Right. Like, you keep that into your little cocktail parties. Don't talk into a microphone.
Right. I'm glad that there has been some reconciliation with Uma Thurman.
Yeah, me too.
She's in the right, definitely.
Yeah.
But because she's in the right, I feel like he must have
groveled
a little bit. I mean, when
her daughter was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I'm like, oh, he must have sent her the biggest box of flowers.
Right.
Anyway.
Right. Camila?
Black Phone 2.
How was that?
I liked it.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, especially, you know, as a sequel, not really. After seeing the first one, it's like, well, how can we do a
I know,
sequel?
It must be quite different.
It's not quite different, but it's different enough, and it brings us to, like, I think Sean said, it's kind of like a Nightmare on Elm Street now. Now we're, like, getting a Freddy Krueger situation, mm-hmm. which is great. I like that we have expanded the world now. Mm-hmm. Like, the first one is the real world. Now the second one we've gotten into, like, oh shit, now there's like this mystical element of everything.
Right.
And Ethan Hawke, amazing, always. A little holiday movie, Oh What Fun, on Amazon mm-hmm. Prime mm-hmm. with Michelle Pfeiffer. Yes. And it was cute. Again, you know, it's cute, it's fun, it's holiday, whatever. Her family, basically mom checks out because her family does not appreciate her, Dennis Leary, as her husband, which is random as hell. Like, where the fuck have you been? And he shows, and he looks.
If 5 minutes ago you had asked me, is Dennis Leary alive? I would have had to think about it.
Yeah, Google it. And there are moments when he's like, you're like, he's wondering, why am I here? Mm-hmm. Like, how did I get here? Mm-hmm. But it's fine. Fantastic Four. Just let it fucking go.
Pretty boring, right?
It's so boring.
Yeah.
Why is it so boring?
I rewatched it with Colin and I was like, no, I still don't like this.
I have never seen a Fantastic Four anything that is good.
I think we're learning that they do not work as their own story.
No, I think I'm assuming all of this is just because of Dr. Doom to do the little extra scene at the end of. To introduce Doctor Doom in the Avengers thing?
It mm-hmm. was better when they like popped it in Doctor Strange and the What's It of Things when they popped in an alternate universe. Yeah. Like, you can drop these four in,
right.
But I don't need them all damn day.
Exactly. No. And it's so sad because, you know, how much I love Pedro Pascal. I'm mm-hmm. like, wow, even he was so boring in this. And finally, Diane Warren, Relentless. Loved it. Fucking loved it.
I am so excited to watch this.
I had no fucking idea. Like, I think I knew the name, and I don't think it wasn't until I started recording with Robin that I actually started understanding who this mm-hmm. Diane Warren person was.
Robin
and,
will make you aware.
Right. And even still, like, and as I'm watching this documentary, it's just like, damn, this woman is just like hit after hit after hit after mm-hmm. hit. Like, she is fucking amazing. And I was on this emotional roller coaster at that point in this movie. Like, I am now emotionally invested in what happens to Diane Warren.
Yes.
I am now a super fan. Like, actually, even like getting to watch her be a person, just who she is and how she moves in the world. And like, she just seems like an awesome person just talking
yeah.
hang out with. Like, I would love to sit down and just talk with her for mm-hmm. like ever. But yeah, top tier. That's coming in second, or it's really close, like neck to neck, neck and neck with the Perfect Neighbor as the best documentary I've seen this year.
I can't wait to watch it. I'm so excited. I love her so much.
Since you mentioned Black Phone too, it's just so relevant to our interests that we have to shout out Mason Thames, the main boy in Black Phone 2. I have no strong opinions about him, and yet he was in 3 number one movies this year alone.
Like, the hell?
Mason,
like,
of Black Phone 2, Regretting You, and How to Train Your Dragon live action.
Like, good for him.
Yeah.
Like, he's still too young for me to have an opinion about his looks, but yeah, good for him.
He's a little bit, reminds me, what's Avatar Man? Sam Worthington?
Oh.
It reminds me a little of him, where he was suddenly everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you? But I mean, good for you,
yeah.
Right. You know, but yeah. I don't care, but hey,
right.
3 number ones, pretty good. Robin?
I saw Rental Family, which,
how was it?
It's one of those movies where I'm like, this is not a great movie. I recommend it enthusiastically. Does that make sense? Where I'm like, it's not like going to change anybody's life, but it is just a really nice movie. Camila, you especially need to watch this because Brendan Fraser's so Coop. He's just so precious.
I every time I look at him these days, I just want to tear up a little bit.
He's clearly also like having the time of his life. Like, I think you can tell he's like, I'm so glad I get to do movies like this. Do you know what I mean?
I just think of him and Kihei Kwan hugging on the Oscar stage. Like, can you believe
have Oscars now?
Right now? Yeah.
We have Oscars. Us.
Yeah.
The cast of Encino Man.
It's like, who'd have thunk?
The one thing I will say is that, like, I was worried it was going to be one of those movies where you're waiting, like, because the plot premise, if you don't know, is that he is an American actor living in Japan, and he gets involved in an agency that, like, hires people to do family things. It's like paid mourners.
Oh, God.
And one of the things they, like, they'll have somebody come apologize to your wife for you. He gets hired. One of his gigs is to be the father of a kid trying to get into a competitive prep school. And the mom lies and says that tells her daughter this is her actual father. And they develop a relationship. And I was really concerned it was going to be that thing where it's like, oh, God, I'm just waiting for her to find out the deception the whole movie. It doesn't work out like that. Like, things are made clear pretty quickly, and people behave like responsible adults also. Like, even though they're lying, they do it in a way that is understandable. Does that make sense? His other main relationship is with this elderly actor, and I found that just equally compelling. Like, it was the one with the cute little girl. So anyway, really liked that movie. Great movie to watch with your parents or whatever, you know, totally good movie for airplane seat back. Just a nice, easygoing movie.
Is that it's
in theaters now. It will be on Hulu soon because it's a Searchlight movie.
Ah, okay.
I saw Nuremberg. Did you ever end up actually seeing that, Sean?
No, I was going to go with my dad, and I got sick that day.
Oh, yeah.
And he went, and he really recommended it, and now that it's not even a Critics' Choice nominee, I'm probably not going to.
Yeah, so I was going to say, I think skip it. Okay. This is a movie made for high school students. It's very much like Baby's First Holocaust movie. Like, have you ever heard of this thing called the Holocaust? And so, like, if you have, it is pretty forgettable. Decent performances, you know. Rami Malek is still just such a weird man. So odd. He's such a strange person. But I felt like an asshole because I was like, this is bullshit for high school students. And then I went on Letterboxd and read Josh Axelrod's review, which is like, I'm glad this movie exists because high school students need to watch it.
That's true.
And I was like, oh, that's a much better perspective.
Fair.
Oops. I'm a jerk. And then the other thing I watched this week was A Private Life, which is Jodie Foster's new French language movie.
I tried to watch that, and the version that was on the Critics' Choice viewing portal had no subtitles. So I was like,
am I going to learn French real quick?
Well, if you log into the Sony for your consideration, you can watch it.
Okay.
And it's good, is the thing. It is such a bizarre freaking movie. She is a psychiatrist who loses a patient, presumably to suicide, and she decides to start investigating. She and her ex-husband start being little detectives.
Love it.
And she, like, goes on a vision quest. It is kind of great. It's, like, very, very weird, very French. I still enjoyed it a lot. And Jodie Foster is just always good.
In theory, that kind of stuff really interests me. They're like, yes, I'm going to investigate this thing on my own and blah, blah, blah. In theory, it sounds really great, but there's no way. I don't want repercussions out of the real world.
Yes. She gets some repercussions. Mm. Yeah. Oh, you know what other thing I watched? Yeah. Merrily We Roll Along.
Oh, I do want to hear your thoughts.
Not a movie.
No, this is, people are now evaluating, do filmed theatrical performances that are filmed well count as movies? If they do, every sports game is a movie.
Yeah.
You have a lot of cameras and you filmed a thing that was happening in front of you with high production values.
I mean, this is different in that they like planned, right? It's not like a live thing that they had to react to in the moment. It's
right.
Less challenging.
Right, exactly. Yes.
I didn't care for it. I think, unfortunately, me watching it through the lens of, am I watching a movie right now? Mm-hmm. Does not do it any favors as a piece of entertainment, because there's a lot of close-ups. Mm. It is very close-up heavy. And I think that was done to make it look more like a movie and less like a stage play. Mm. However, it's still a stage play.
Right.
And so you don't get to see any choreography. I don't actually know if the show has dancing in it or not. It seems like it doesn't. And again, it's like, I'm very sorry to be criticizing Sondheim. I know that makes me like, that's as bad as me not liking dogs. But like, maybe there should be some dancing. It's very much like people singing at each other. And they kind of sing the same thing. It's like this dynamic between the three of them over and over and over again. And then it's like, and now's one where they actually still like each other. And it's like, okay, well, this took a while for us to get to change. And also, I think that it going backwards is weird and sad. I guess it's just a weird and sad story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an examination of how hard it is to maintain friendships.
Right. And I also did it no favors by immediately watching Blue Moon again afterwards, which is a very stagey movie, right? That could so easily be a play. Right. And yet you're watching it and you're like, no, this is a fucking movie because it is.
I saw that cast on Broadway and that was very good.
Mm.
But
I was impressed with how high Daniel Radcliffe can jump.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, he was great.
And I think that if he can jump that high, do some choreography using that jump.
Hey, what are we doing right now? So
our next episode's going to be our year end recap,
which will be 199.
That's right.
So then the one after that is 200.
Do you want to know what we're doing?
Yeah, it feels like we don't have an ending for the show otherwise.
Okay. So.
We still didn't do the song either.
Yeah, well next time we will do a little 2025 in review, and I'll try to pack in a few more movies before then. But the time after that is our 200th episode. Now, on our 100th episode, Robin had a third bingo and told us that we would watch
Ghost.
Tony Goldwyn connection.
Mm-hmm.
Big number one we hadn't hit yet. So now it's our 200th episode. Robin has another third bingo, just worked out neatly.
Yeah. Mm.
So what are we going to be doing?
A Few Good Men.
Yeah.
Don't sound so disappointed.
Hi, this is Editing Robin. Just wanted to pop in and make it clear that we recorded last week. So the reason we're not talking about Rob Reiner is because he had not yet died. We are all very sad. We will be talking about this much more, I'm sure, in our upcoming 200th episode. But let me take you back to last week.
No, I'm very excited, thrilled to finally be seeing it. It's
same.
It's just shame at this point, because I don't know how many, there were more than 100 You Can't Handle the Truths.
Mm-hmm.
So it took like 300 podcasts and 10 years for me to get around to watching the movie my podcast was named after. Really feels like, this is why when people say to me, hey, you know what movie you should watch? They should shut the fuck up right then. The dance card is full. And at the rare moments when I have a choice, I'm going to make it myself.
Well, not clearly, today.
Not today. No, I'm thrilled. I love Jack Nicholson. I love that one of the kids who can't act from Twin Peaks is prominently featured.
Mm. Why are we doing this?
Because of You Can't Handle the Truth.
Because of
okay,
You Can't
that's Handle. Yes. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Yes, half of our show is named after that movie. So,
Have you never seen it either?
No, not all the way through. I know I've started it numerous times, but I don't think I've ever.
I've seen it.
I'm going to assume you have.
Yes.
You just said that out loud. I've been saying, There's a lot going on in my brain right now. I have to go home. Got a new job starting soon. The theater company's got some holiday shows. Elf was released.
It's going to be okay, Sean.
Say the sentence I usually say now with November 16th, 2003 in it.
Elf was released on November 16th, 2003. What was the number one song in America?
Hey, yeah.
No.
That was also my guess. Crazy in Love.
No, but you're very warm.
As in Beyonce warm?
As in Beyonce. Even as in Beyonce featuring warm.
What was the other one?
Baby Boy.
Yeah, Baby Boy.
Correct.
Featuring Sean Paul?
Yes.
Yes.
That's the second time he's... Didn't we have a solo Sean Paul song? Probably.
I think so.
I think he was good for a couple seconds.
Yeah.
I have so little to add. Because no one has anything to say about Sean Paul.
No.
And Beyonce's great, but this comes up every fourth episode It's Beyonce. Hey, release the movie!
Release Renaissance Fulfilled by Beyonce! We need to see it!
Roll credits.